Okay, we are continuing our journey through the Hebrew alphabet, the Aleph-Bet, and we are on letter number 5. That is the He, and I'm just going to put it up on our screen again, make sure we know it is this 5th letter right over here. We pointed it out a couple of times. The most significant feature of this letter is the fact that it is made up and comprised of 2 Hebrew letters. You have the Dalet, which corresponds to the vertical and horizontal and vertical on this side. And then you have the Yud, upside down, but the Yud. And we talked about the fact that Dalet is the letter, I'm sorry, He is the letter of the integration of the physical and the spiritual, that level of completeness. We are neither Dalet, completely physical, that's an animal or a corpse, just physicality, nor are we just a Yud, which represents spirituality, which is an angel. We really, our world is that hybrid. You know, we talked about the fact that when a person reaches that level of perfect integration, the letter that gets added to their name is very often the letter He. I didn't mention, but it's also true, therefore, that we even find that the number that corresponds to the levels of our soul. Yes, we haven't really talked about it. Maybe we will get to it at some point. But the soul that's within each one of us really is not a one-dimensional soul. It has levels. In fact, there's really 5 levels within the soul, and they correspond to different aspects of it. You can use the term, it's the emotional side of it, it's the spiritual side. They represent different aspects. But there are 5 such levels. It therefore, if we're going to really understand how He is that integration of physical and spiritual, that level of completeness of the totality of our world, then we have to take a step back and ask ourselves, we know that when we talk about the names of God, let's be very clear. Anytime we use names of God, we are not describing the essence of God. We have to be clear. Even though when we talk about names of ourselves or names of items and objects in our world, we are defining them by their name. We've spoken a few times about the fact that a person has a Hebrew name. That is their defining essence. It's impossible, therefore, to give God a name, because by definition, a name is giving it limitations. It's this and not that. It's this characteristic that's dominant as opposed to something else. That's an impossibility when we talk about God. So whenever we talk about names of God, we are not defining the essence of God. This is very important. Any name that we have, first of all, the names that we have come from God himself. These are the quote-unquote names he told us about himself. For example, the third word in the Torah, Bereshit Bara Elokim, in the beginning of God creating the heavens and earth. He named it Elohim. Now, does that mean that is defining his essence? No. Every single name that is used for God is describing an aspect as we perceive that about him. It's not actually defining him, but in the role that we see God playing as, let's say, for example, creator, he associates that name, that attribute of creation and putting structure on and form on this primordial chaos that existed beforehand. God said that when we talk about that relationship that I have with creation of the world, it's related to the name Elohim. That's the name. What is the name that is most commonly used for God is the famous name, again, we call it, we refer to this often, is the 4-letter name Yud and He and Vav and He, the tetragrammaton, the ineffable name of God that we don't pronounce the way it's written. Let's just very briefly try to focus. We're not going to get to all of it. But the letter of that name is the first letter is a Yud, and the last letter is a He. Remember, it's Yud, followed by a He, followed by a Vav, followed by a He. We're not going to talk about the middle Vav and He tonight. Okay? Make a note of it. We'll get to it, hopefully, God willing. But the first letter is the Yud. Yud is all spirituality. Jump to the very bottom, you get to the He, which is the complete integration of spirituality and physicality. If you want to look at it, the name Yud and He and Vav and He is the name that's associated from that flow of godliness from up there, God, working its way down. Remember we talked about the four levels, the four worlds, the four steps in the process of transforming it into something we can relate to? Working its way from a Yud concept of spirituality, skip the middle, down to the He, which is that complete, the last letter of that name, the He is the complete integration into the physical realm. We'll talk about the other letters, God willing, at a different point. But that's also very much, it's really critical to understand this because we also mentioned yesterday that the letter He has the numerical value of 5. Well, 5, the one thing I told you about it, the most famous 5 of all are the 5 books of the Torah, the 5 books of Moses. Yes, because that's the instruction manual that explains how one can successfully merge and integrate living in a physical world, yet having that spiritual side and focus as well. Now, this Torah concept, this idea that the Torah is associated with this number 5 is really from the very beginning of creation. What was God, what was the first creation on day one? No, it was not heaven and earth. That's a little later, actually. So what is the very first creation? If you open up chapter 1 of your Torah, you will find that it says that on the first day God called and said, let there be light. Let there be or, aleph vav resh, let there be light. How many times in those few sentences is the mention of or, of light mentioned? Yes. Good guess. 5. 5 times on day one, this concept of light. Now, let's put this in perspective. There's a very interesting midrash that tells us that when Moshe went up Mount Sinai to receive the Torah, the midrash describes that he went up 7 heavens, 7 levels as he came closer and closer and closer to that godliness. Each time, obviously, he's growing on a higher level of understanding and closeness to God. He goes up 7 levels. For those who understand what I'm going to say next, great. If not, don't worry about it. These are the 7 expressions we just said for the last 2 days in Yalev V'Yavo, the paragraph that we add for Rosh Chodesh, for Yom Tov. We use 7 different levels of it should go up, and it should come, and it should bring closer. We use 7 different expressions, and on the 8th, the prayer comes before God. That's what the Vilna Gaon writes. Okay, but the Midrash tells us that on each one of those 7 levels, Moshe encountered a group of angels, and the angels taught Moshe, they reviewed with him that number day creation. So on level number 1, they read to him the account of creation of day 1 and then taught a corresponding lesson. So the Midrash says, okay, when he got to level 1 and they read to him about the creation of day 1, what lesson did they teach him? And the Midrash says that they taught him the beauty and the depth of the greatness of Torah. That's all on the first level. Now, what is the connection between the creation of on day 1 and Torah? Perhaps we have already been given that key. What is Torah? Well, let's start backwards. What is this light of day 1? It does not mean light as we know it of fluorescent or even LEDs or even sunlight. That's impossible. Why? Because we know that if you follow the other days of creation, the sun, the moon, the stars, all of the orbiting constellations and planets don't take place until the 4th day of creation. So what exactly was this light of day 1? This is a question that the Talmud itself asks. The Talmud adds an interesting piece about this light. The Talmud says that this light Adam tsofe bo mi sofa olam the ad sofo. Adam, the first man, was able to utilize this light to see, literally the expression means to see from one end of the universe to the other. Now, it's hard. I know that all of us grew up with the concept of superheroes that have superpowers and maybe even X-ray vision. But there's no reason in the world the Talmud would be telling me that Adam was blessed with X-ray vision. That has no meaning to us. What is that supposed to mean? So what does the Talmud mean when it says that Adam had some ability to use this light to see from one end to the other? It doesn't mean physical. What our sages tell us is that if you've ever looked at a comic strip, our sages don't use this example, that's mine. But the concept that if you ever want to draw or illustrate somebody who has an idea, the symbol that's often used is a light bulb. When a light bulb goes off in a person's head, that doesn't mean that all of a sudden there's watts of electricity flowing through. Maybe that is what goes on. But it's rather its portrayal of something that now becomes penetrating. It's an illuminating, a clear view of something. When you get an idea, all of a sudden something clicks and you're like, ah, that's what that means. Or that's how I can do it. The light doesn't only mean physical, but rather when you get a clear view of the essential nature of something and you can appreciate it. Adam had the access to that light. The light, what was the light of day one? The light was clarity. Clarity of why God is creating a world. But remember, folks, this is day one of creation. By the time we finish through all of 6 days of creation, what has been built from that clarity to where we are now? What became the buffer in the middle? Yeah. All the different layers of mask, of physicality that we've now come to understand and appreciate. It gets hidden. But the very first thing of creation was the fulfillment of the goal. Why I'm creating a universe. There was clarity. When it says that Adam was able to access that light, to see from one end to the other, that means he understood the totality. He had clarity of vision of what it was all about. That's really what it was. So what happened to that light? You say to me, well, if on day one it was created, and by the time day six finishes, where did it go? Okay, so you say it's just hiding behind some masks, but where? And why? Better question is, why did God have to hide it? Why didn't he leave it around? So I hope at this point you all have that answer. Why didn't God just leave that absolute clarity around? Tell me the two letters I'm looking for. Two English letters. Stands for the two most important words that we ever talk about other than God. Somebody.
Free will?
Thank you. FW, free will. Because if there's absolute clarity, there's no choice. There has to be choice. So God creates that concept. It is in existence in our world. And now we start filtering it. Now we start putting masks, layers and layers and layers of masks. So God purposely hid it. Where he hid it, we can talk about in a moment. But it got hidden. It got hidden behind all of this. The Zohar asks the simple question, where did God hide that light? Where is it? I want to access it. I want to be able to see what our world is really all about. I want to be able to put on my spiritual glasses to see the world, not just in a physical way, but to see the spirituality as well. Says the Zohar, you know where God hid that light of clarity? He hid it in the Torah itself. The Torah now became the repository of all of that clarity. And listen to how the Zohar proves it. It's fascinating. I told you, what is the connection? The angels taught Moshe on that first level. They read to him the creation of day one, and the corresponding lesson was the beauty of Torah. Well, we now understand both pieces. What was created on day one? Light, clarity. What's the corresponding lesson? The beauty of Torah. The Zohar says, you know how I know that the the light of clarity was put in the Torah, because the phrase Et Ha'or, the light, which was mentioned five times in that first day of creation, has the numerical value of 613. 613 are the number of mitzvot that represent the totality of Torah. Bam! Yeah, the association of light, clarity, is directly linked to the Torah. That's why when we think of the number five, we immediately, and I remember our song of Who Knows One? Yeah, what's five? Five are the books of the Torah, because that is the mechanism by which we are able to access that light of clarity. Anytime we talk about that flow, that energy, that sense of clarity into our world coming from God, it's always through this medium of number five. I'll give you another example. How about the example of when we go on Yom Tov, on the festivals, and the priests offer priestly blessings to us? Birkat Kohanim. Yeah. Most of us don't really know, either because we're not a Kohen or because we never really peeked from under the talit. But what happens is that the Kohen actually is spreading out their two hands. How they do it, what's the formation, maybe we'll talk about it. But the long and short of it is that that concept of the hands of the Kohanim, each hand being a five, the two hands, the two fives, hey, doesn't that sound vaguely familiar, like the two stone tablets having five on one, five on the other? The Torah is all encompassing that way. Your Ten Commandments aren't a list of ten. It's broken down as sets of five. Yeah, because that's the concept here. The hands of the Kohanim, which by the way, they're able to make in their, the way they hold it, five groupings. Think of Spock from Star Trek, how he did his thing, you know, with the Vulcan whatever. Yeah, well, that's part of where he got the concept. Leonard Nimoy was a Jew who went to shul many times. He knew what this stuff was. Yeah, that's where this all is. So five is that concept of bringing clarity, Torah, into our world. Now, it goes even further, because here's the following. There's a beautiful thing. My niece, God willing, is getting married tomorrow in Israel. I should be there, but I'm not because of the situation. My niece, Blimi, anyone who's been in camp knows, Blimi's getting married tomorrow, God willing, in a few hours. So why am I telling you this? Oh, because at a wedding, the songs that we sing and the blessings that we make under the chuppah, we actually make reference to the chasen and kala, the bride and the groom and the bride, that they, if you bring joy to them at their wedding, you're blessed with five kolot, five sounds, five voices of blessing. We know it in our Sheva Brachot songs, what we sing. Kol sason v'kol simcha, kol chatan v'kol kala, kol mitzalot chasanim, and go on. We mentioned kol, the voice, five times. You have the chatan and the kala joining together, because that is the new integration of completeness. They are now a formed whole, a new entity. Husband alone, wife alone is not complete. It's only when there is a union together that forms that full picture. They complete each other. They bring the latent potential within each one of them into actuality and completion, just like the Torah. The Torah was also given with five sounds. If you read the section in the book of Exodus where it talks about the giving of the Torah, you will find the phrase kol, the voice, the sound, either of the shofar or God's voice emanating, speaking to the people. It mentions it five times. Again, it's the same concept of where the letter hey, the number five, is representative of the totality of merging and integration of the physical and the spiritual. Let's take it even further. The letter hey, used grammatically, again, you don't have to know Hebrew, but if you do, it will enhance your appreciation. when you put the hey at the beginning of a word, not as an essential letter, but as a prefix to a word, in English we call it the definitive, the definite article. It's specific. The, if I want to say the child, not child, boy is yelled. If I want to say the boy, that one, I would say ha yelled. And I put a hey at the beginning of that word. It becomes definitive. This one. Why is the letter hey the letter that is making this kind of prefix to make it so specific? This one and not anything else. Well, because it's the same concept of where the purest expression of bringing something to its completion, to say it's real, is to say it's this. And you can specify this one. If I'm talking about children in general, so there's children. It's this one and this one and this one and that one. But if I can be so specific, that means it's as real as it can get. My concept came down to a very finite, definitive thing, to this, the child. Therefore, the letter hey is the letter of that completion and full integration. But now it gets better. That's not enough for you. There's something else that the letter hey is used for, and it's not as a prefix, but it's used as a suffix at the end of a word. Here is where English and Hebrew go in very different directions. In English, we have words that are either masculine or feminine or neutral. He, she, and it. He is masculine, she is feminine, it is neutral. In Hebrew, there is no such concept as neutral. It's either masculine or feminine. And the same word, similar to he becomes she, somehow adding the S, it became feminine. But that's not a rule. S is not a letter that's associated with femininity. It's just, that's whatever the convention was to turn he into she, from masculine to feminine. In Hebrew, there are specific rules. For example, if you use the word yeled, which means boy, and you now want to say girl, you don't have another separate word. Boy and girl in English have no connection to each other. They're just words we made up. However, in Hebrew, if you want to say boy, you use three letters, yud, lamed, dalet, for the word yeled. If you want to say girl, you add a hey. All you do is add a hey at the end of that word, and it becomes yalda. Yalda is a girl. Na'ar is a youth. Na'ara is a young lady. Hey at the end is the feminine. Yes, the letter hey is an extremely feminine letter. Now, before you get all wrinkled hair, calm down. That's not a yay, it's not a nay, it's a fact. Let's talk for a minute about this concept of masculinity and femininity. It's not limited. When we talk about language in the Hebrew language, we are not talking only genders. We're not talking only about a boy and a girl. Every single human being has both chromosomes. You have X's and Y's. You have masculine traits. You have feminine traits. Yes, if you stereotype and you look at in a general way, male species have more masculinity, have more of that those character traits, and females have the other character traits. But everybody's got both. Masculine, from a Torah perspective, is not limited, again, to boy, girl, male, female. But the act, when I'm acting in a masculine way, I'm giving over of myself to affect something or someone else. That's an act of being masculine. You could be a female and acting in a masculine way. Similarly, the feminine trait is much more of taking that thing, you receive it, you work on it, and then you raise it to a new level. That's a feminine trait. Again, the masculine is much more the giving of yourself outward and affecting something, The feminine takes it, works on it, nurtures it, and creates something even higher. For example, in this mode that we are in right now, I'm teaching you. I'm exercising my masculine trait. Nothing to do with gender. If it were Fran up here teaching the class, she would be utilizing the masculine trait because I'm giving over the information. Everybody else on the Zoom call, whether you are a male or a female, you are in femininity mode because you are on the receiving end. You are going to take what I give you, work on it, integrate it, and elevate it in your own life, how you understand it, making connections to other things you already know, perhaps. This is not limiting to gender. These are modalities. We all have it. Typically, you find, as I said, that masculine trait. If you want, let's go back a step even further. How is it 8:30 already? We talked about two traits of God. We talked about chesed, kindness, giving of oneself, and we talked about din, judgment, right? We contrasted the name Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey. From here on in, I'm just going to say Yud Ke Vav Ke. You'll understand. It just flows easier, right? Yud Ke Vav Ke, we associated with God's giving of himself, associated with chesed. That's, quote, a masculine trait. But similarly, din, which is not giving free, all limitless, but just the opposite. It puts structure. It takes what it's been given and says, whoa, but it's got to work within these rules, these parameters, these regulations, and it puts a tight structure on it. That is much more in the feminine. It took this huge idea. Remember when we talked about 3 and 4, the patriarchs represented the idealism, this massive idea of fantastic, what can be accomplished? And it took the 4 matriarchs to say, great, now let's bring it in, reel it in, T, let's get it a little bit more structured. In a similar way, these are the traits. Chesed, that limitless constant of giving, 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 giving to affect something or someone. And din, the rules, the regulations, the infrastructure, the feminine aspect of taking something, working on it, and then raising it to a higher level. Think about biology or physiology of human bodies. In biology, the giver, the male, the masculine, gives, science has already told us, in just one little bit of, you have 1 million sperm running around. It's 1 million of them, whatever the number is, 250,000, right? One egg. One. Great. You have this great idea. You want to have a child. Yeah. So you throw 250,000 things at the wall. Let's see what's going to stick. And the woman says, one, I'm going to put structure on this. I'm going to put masculine represents an all giving limitless, and din feminine is okay. Let's reel this in. Let's put it all together. Working with what was given to it, limiting it, raising it to a higher level, creating the child. Physiology, the way the anatomy is set up. On the masculine, it's external, and on the feminine, it's internal. It all matches the same concept. The letter Hey, and we're going to have to come back to this, the letter Hey is that feminine association with this idea. It would make sense, therefore, when Sarai, her name was changed to Sarah. It wasn't just, okay, a hey, but it's more than she learned to integrate physical and spiritual. She, that increased elevated level allowed her now to become able to become pregnant. She couldn't become pregnant beforehand. Avram couldn't have a child either. Only Avraham could have a child by adding that letter. It's interesting. She only became pregnant, as I said, after her name was changed. But look at all the other matriarchs. They all end with a hey. Leah. Rivka. They all end with a hey. Even the 2 maidservants that Jacob married, Zilpah and Bilhah. They all end with the hey, not just because it's feminine, but because it represents that concept of being able to take the ideas, to take this large, limitless giving, putting it within a structure to then take it, work on it, elevate it. It's not strange, therefore, who's the one matriarch who didn't have a hey at her in her name? Rachel. Rachel ends with a lamed. There's no hey. She's the one who had the most difficult time becoming pregnant. When does she finally get that privilege? After she gives her maidservant Bilhah to Yaakov to marry. How many hays does Bilhah have at the end of her name? Not one, two. It's spelled bet lamed hey hey. That extra hey on Bilhah served ultimately to help Rachel. This is this concept of the hay having a feminine side. If you look at the story, when unfortunately Yaakov's daughter Dina was abducted and violated by the man named Shechem, when you read that section in the Torah, every time it refers to Dina as the young lady, it's spelled na'ar, it's pronounced na'ara, which means a young lady, except it's written without the hey, nun ayin resh, and it's pronounced the same, na'ara. You don't need the hey to get that phonetic pronunciation. It's spelled without the hey. Why? How, again, when you see anomalies like this in the Torah, you have to ask yourself why. Because in the reference to that case, Shechem did not look at her as a young lady with class, as a young lady who's up and cut. None of that. It's missing all of those hays because in his mind, it's as if it was masculine. He didn't see her for who she was. Lastly, for those of us who put on tefillin, it's learning it as a bar mitzvah boy, it's counterintuitive. Why? Because they told you, oh, are you a righty? Yeah, put it on your left hand. Huh? I thought if I'm doing right, it should be on the right hand. That's always the dominant hand. Why is it, and if you're a lefty, by the way, you put it on your right hand. You always put it on your weaker hand, your non-dominant hand. Why? Where does that come from? Ah, open up your Shema. Open up in your Siddur and look up the mitzvah of tefillin. It says that you're supposed to bind them upon your arm. Ukeshartam le'ot al yodecha. Now, typically, yodecha is spelled with just three letters. Yud, Dalet, and a final chaf. Yodecha. However, the Torah spells it differently. It's spelled yud, Dalet, chaf, hey. It's pronounced exactly the same way, but you get an extra hey. Why, says the Talmud? Because it's going to have to be on the more feminine side, the non-dominant, the one that's not going out, give. It's the one that puts the structure. The dominant hand is the one giving. The other hand is the non-dominant, is more associated with the feminine. Hence, the tefillin always goes on the non-dominant hand. I've just scratched the surface. But what I want you to walk away with from tonight is these two concepts. That the letter hey, for including what we said yesterday about integration, physical and spiritual. But tonight we learned that the letter hey also, the five represents the Torah. Because the Torah is the epitome of combining it, of the physical and the spiritual. The understanding that the Torah, which is the hidden light of clarity of how to do it properly in our world, that's another aspect of the letter hey. And other piece that we just mentioned now is this feminine side, that is the ability to understand that the giving still needs a structure within which to form, to integrate it, work on it, and the ability to raise it to a higher level. We'll pause here and we'll continue with hey tomorrow night. Any questions?
Yeah, if I may, you mentioned about Abraham was not able to father until he received the hay from God,
for the Jewish people. He had Ishmael at right. 86, at 86, 87?
Okay, yeah.
86 or 87.
But it was, yes. That was a physical concept with Hagar.
That's correct. Robin.
This might be too much for the end of a class, so you might want to start with it tomorrow. But I was thinking last night that the hay seems similar to the bet, where that you have the physical and the spiritual in between. So I'm not sure the difference now as far as that.
Remember, no, everything has an element of spirituality, but bet is the signifying of diversity of our world. Okay. Everything in our world can't be an Aleph. Bet is about plurality, diversity. That's really what it is. What we mentioned is the fact that the bet wants to connect back to the Aleph. That's a concept of understanding that despite the diversity, there's a way for it to become unified, oneness.
But I thought there was like the top and the bottom of it. And so the bottom was the physical and the top was the spiritual. Okay, that sounds similar to what we're talking about. That's where I was confused.
Similar on a very superficial level, but I'm showing you that this hay is much more. This is an integrated completion. Bet may have the elements of it, but the hay is the actual putting it all together of completion, physicality and spirituality. That's not the bet.
Got it. Okay. Just making. Thank you.
Fran.
So oftentimes the hey at the end of the word doesn't have a nakuda, doesn't have a vowel, so it's essentially silent, like an olive. Does that mean it is noting that feminine?
No.
Always?
I don't think so.
Like, what's its purpose?
No. Well, first of all, I'm showing you. Its purpose is to teach us something about the word. First of all, that it has a feminine side.
That's certainly, what I'm saying. Is it always going to
be? It's not a silent.
It doesn't
no,
always,
not always
mean that.
It's not always. It really depends on the vowel that it's associated with. Remember, the hey, we call it a silent hey because it doesn't get its own sound, but hey is not a silent letter. It's not intrinsically a silent letter, right? I was waiting for someone to say to me, does that mean all women shouldn't be talking? No, that's not what this is all about. No. There's plenty of sounds associated with the feminine side. No. But depending on what word it is and what vowel is associated with it, that is an indication about it. But a hey at the end, as a general rule, is an indication of feminine. Most, like certain words, they just are. And it's always it's a hard rule to, because there's so many exceptions, but you take a word like sefer. Sefer means book. Well, I don't know. Is that masculine or feminine? I don't know. Do you add a hey at the end? No, if you pluralize it, is it svarot, which is the plural feminine, or is it svarim, which is the plural masculine? Well, it's svarim, it's masculine. So that gives an indication, sefer is masculine. Why? Makes sense to me, because what a book's job is to have that imparting, that constant giving. It's in giving mode. It's not in receiving mode, it's giving mode. So words are always associated with one of those two genders, and hey, is more often than not that association with feminine.
Like the name Moshe has an hey on the end.
Had a feminine side to him. That is correct. Even if somebody doesn't have, I don't have a hey in my name, right? But I have a certain, everyone does. With Moshe, that's an intrinsic part of who he is. For me, it's not as intrinsic. You hear the difference? Yeah. So the letter, and again, I don't want to box us in to say every single time you see a hey, it's this. Well, I've already given you three things that hey stand for. I don't know exactly every single time. Do I believe in my heart, if I knew more, that I could integrate all of the pieces? Yeah, because I believe it is an integrated whole. That's called the Torah. It's a godly work. I'm not able to explain all the examples yet. I'm working on it. All right, we good? Anybody else? If not, 8 p.m. tomorrow night, we'll continue with the letter Hey.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Everybody.
Thank you.